How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is May 21, 2013, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We are here to talk about Raw. Mostly talking about Raw, and we will get into a bunch of questions as well. We have a lot of questions. Should start off today by wishing the best to everybody affected by the horrible tornado.
Oh, God, I know.
And, yeah, you wrote today in the update that Jim Ross was actually very close to...
He was 5 miles from the tornado, and there was, like, devastation, like, very close to his house. I mean, he was... I know he was without power for a long time, and I think that he had, if I remember correctly, he'd had some damage done, I think, by a tornado not all that long ago. I mean, not like this tornado, but like, you know, maybe, I don't know. I just did this idea that someone had told me that he had some roof damage at his house, like at some point fairly recently. From something like that, but and I don't know, and I don't know what happened as far as if he had like minor damage or anything like that. But I mean, he didn't have any significant damage, but there were people all around him that had horrible damage.
Yeah, it was a mile wide, and they did talk about how obviously there was great devastation. But there were also people that lived very, very close to it that escaped unscathed. So what happened to Jim Ross, I guess, happened to some other people as well. But terrible situation. And hopefully everybody listening to this is doing all right if you're from the area.
Oh, man. I mean, this stuff, you know. Yeah. Whenever I hear about these things, it's just really, you know, there's just been a lot. I don't know if we, it just feels like there's been a lot more tragedies in the last 2-3 years. Of the, you know, whether it's weather or, you know, and often weather related. I mean, there's been some massacres and things like that that, you know, like the thing in Boston is not weather related, but there's just been a lot of stuff.
I don't want to harp on it a lot, but in the opening segment of Raw, I don't have any problem with the ambulance coming out and the ambulance match and everything like that, but I just felt that, could you really have just cut out the line about sending all these people to the morgue? You know what I mean? I mean, was it really needed, even if nothing had happened? And the fact that something did happen, I don't know. There's just something about it that really annoyed me.
They were tone deaf a couple of weeks ago too with the Boston thing. They didn't even mention it on the show, and I know a lot of people were critical of them for not mentioning it that night. I mean, their answer was that we're trying to keep people's minds away from it, but it's kind of like, you know, by ignoring, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying go harp on it, but you can at least wish people the best, especially since they are, you know, so close to when it happened. And again, tonight, even, you know, quite frankly, you know, you can you got 3 hours, you can mention it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, it's yeah, you can you can mention it. I was going to like try to say something. Well, they, you know, try to make an excuse. There, you can mention it. I'm not going to. There is no excuse. You know, there really isn't. I mean, you're part of the world. I mean, it's like, I don't know, but whatever. Especially, you know, again, with Jim Ross being, you know, right in the epicenter and at least, you know, telling, you know, say to people that you know, that hopefully Jim Ross is okay, or Jim Ross is okay. We just heard from Jim Ross, you know, which at some point, I think that they probably during the show did hear from him. I'm just guessing in some form. Maybe just even if it was just a text or something. You know, they could just say, you know, for those of you who were worried about Jim Ross, I don't know that people were necessarily, but, you know, Oklahoma, you know, Jim Ross is so, what's the word I'm looking for? He's so associated with Oklahoma that, you know, there would probably be people who were somewhat interested in it. But I don't know. That's whatever. That's the new thing. The new thing is when stuff like that happens to not talk about it because we're in the business of smiles and you know, I mean that's their philosophy. So there you go.
I just remember when TNA before Impact mentioned Boston.
Yeah, yeah.
And that did not ruin my enjoyment of the show, nor did it make me frown. It was almost like, wow, that was really nice. And the show started, and I enjoyed the show.
And I would think there's an extremely good chance that they'll do the same this week on Thursday because they're, you know, I don't know that. I haven't talked to anyone there. I just think that they probably will do the exact same thing. If I was running the company, you know, I would do a graphic at the beginning. I would probably make one mention during the show. You know, it's not going to ruin anyone's enjoyment, and it just tells you that you care, like we did, you know? I mean, seriously, you know, it's like we're going to talk wrestling for the next whatever hour, but, you know, I mean, seriously, you know, it's like it's part of the world, and we care. We really do. So for all of you, any of you from there, we wish the best to you.
Yeah. So Raw did, in fact, open with Ryback coming out and on an ambulance. And he announced that there was no John Cena on the show, although he did work off the air. But he'll be back in action next week. So for everybody that thought that he would be back tonight, well, he was off the show 1 week. So Ryback essentially challenged him to a match at the Payback pay-per-view. It's going to be an ambulance match. Said that it did not matter whether your heart was beating or not, he said. There will still be a winner and a loser. I'm going to toss you in this ambulance and take you to the morgue, he said. Yeah. Just like all of you will someday go to the morgue. No idea what the morgue had to do with anything or why this had to be mentioned. It was infuriating.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's the match for Payback. Ryback is not the champion. Ryback didn't even make a case for him being the champion, actually. Not a good case. And
I think he touched on it, but not as strongly as I would have expected.
No, he should have come out and said, I'm the champion.
Yeah, and, you know, the announcers didn't really do it either. I mean, they sort of did. It was funny that people on the internet made a better case for him than the company did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, made a better case for controversy and a rematch and everything like that. I mean, the one thing with the ambulance match, as the thing is the way they do those ambulance matches and the way they do their finishes, nobody really, I mean, someone's going to get thrown in there, but it's not really, you know, it's not a pinfall. It's not the kind of a loss that people accept as a loss. So, you know, if Ryback is to lose, it's not like he really got pinned. And if he was to win, you know, it would be enough of a fluke. So it's like, you know, they basically get through the match again, you know, with whatever the thing is without really, I mean, someone will win and someone will lose, but they really won't be beating anybody in that manner, in that decisive manner or anything like that to where, you know, I mean, if they do the finish right, because again, usually their ambulance match finishes, you know, they've done some that are pretty significant, and then they've done others that are not as strong, so to speak.
This led to the first match, Jericho and The Miz versus Fandango and Wade Barrett. And Fandango and Wade weren't getting along pretty much from before the match even started. The match began, and Fandango all of a sudden decided that he was going to announce to the world that his name was Fandango. He left the ring. He started dancing with Summer Rae. They were playing his music. The match is still going on. Some people are singing and dancing. Jericho starts doing a big comeback. And finally hits the Codebreaker, tags in Miz. Miz puts on the figure four. Miz taps Wade Barrett. And that's that. So Fandango leaves. He bails as Miz and Jericho go after him. Runs through the crowd like a coward. Summer Rae is there
at
ringside.
He
knocked a fan over as he rushed out.
Yeah.
It looked like, I mean, he just kind of ran by and guy was... This was not like, you know, the flying guillotine leg drop. I mean, it was appeared to be a complete accident as he was running. He bonked into somebody. But, yeah, he took out a fan. And then Jericho went over, and he propositioned Summer Rae, and he dipped her, and her heart was going all a flutter. And then he put his hand in her face, laughed, walked off, and everybody cheered. She was very upset. The second time they've done something with Jericho and Summer Rae.
Yeah, he blew her off this time, though.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. It was interesting. Road Dogg challenged Fandango during the match.
Yes.
They showed something backstage. I don't know if that's going to lead to anything, but, I mean, it should, because why would you put it on TV if it doesn't, right?
Well, I don't know.
It may not, but, I mean, it you know, I mean, why waste the time to do it?
I think they were just trying to give you something to make you interested in the app.
Oh, I know.
which was actually funny because the best app plug was during the Cody Zach match, where they say on the WWE app, this is what you can see right now. And the app shows up on the screen, and it's a picture of Ryback watching the match.
That's
like,
hilarious.
Wow, I need to download this app so I can watch Ryback watching the match.
But the key was to establish that Ryback was watching the match because he was doing a run-in like a minute later.
Sure, but still.
But it was hilarious.
Like, wow.
I know, it's like, yeah, let's
get
the app to watch Ryback looking at a screen.
Yes. So, yeah, that was that, and there you go.
So, theoretically, and I mean, Miz and Barrett, I think that they had hinted at it at TV, and I had actually been told of it, that Miz and Barrett was going to be the Intercontinental program. Miz beating him with a figure four seems to indicate that is the direction.
Mm-hmm. What is the Sin Cara match coming up on Main Event?
That's Sin Cara challenging Wade Barrett for the title. That's going to be taped tomorrow night. It'll air on Wednesday.
How about that?
I don't think Sin Cara is winning the title.
Why? I don't know.
Why? Well, Sin Cara beat him in a non-title match, so that makes sense too.
I guess the number one contenders just line up.
Well, Miz hasn't started the program yet. Sin Cara probably, you know, will get the one shot, most likely lose, and then they go with Miz. You know, then start with Miz maybe on SmackDown or on Raw next week and start building that where it's the pay-per-view. Or maybe Sin Cara wins. I don't see Sin Cara winning the title. Because they don't seem to be. I mean, they didn't even put him on. They didn't even put Sin Cara on the show tonight. So I'm thinking that I'd be very surprised if he wins the title. But it's just something to do for the Wednesday show.
All righty, we had Vicky Guerrero coming out and announced that Jack Swagger was going to be facing an opponent later that we could vote on, and our choices were R-Truth, the Great Khali, or Randy Orton.
Boy, was that obvious.
I'll say. Why even bother?
That was like almost when they did that announcement, when they announced Randy Orton, it's like, wow. They are not taking any chances by putting like Chris Jericho or everything. I mean, you know, if you watch this show, I mean, they had 16 and a half minutes blocked for that match. And it's like, there is no way they were going to put R-Truth, let alone the Great Khali, in a 16 and a half minute television match. I mean, you know, they had this thing completely booked, and they weren't, like I said, like they weren't going to put Sheamus in there, they weren't going to put Jericho in there, they weren't going to make that mistake this time.
All righty, we had Daniel Bryan and Kane backstage. Daniel Bryan very upset about what happened. They lost the tag titles. Didn't think Kane was taking it seriously enough, which is typical WWE protocol when you lose a title. So Kane said, don't worry, we can, we'll win him back. And then Kofi came up and tried to dissuade the situation. We had Sheamus.
Kane talked about, it was almost like this argument where someone twists your words, where Kane says, we don't want to be showing weakness. And then Daniel Bryan started yelling at Kane that he's not the weak link. You know, even though Kane never said that he was the weak link.
That did play a part later in the show as well. We had Sheamus and Titus O'Neil set up on the deal last night, the post-show. It was not long. Sheamus beat him. Bro kick, white noise. I think the most notable thing here was that Titus O'Neil, in the middle of this match, looked right in the camera and screamed, I believe, "You think you're fucking tough?" And they had to bleep it.
Yeah.
So if you see Titus O'Neil doing a bunch of jobs on television over the next couple of weeks, that's probably why.
Actually, I wouldn't be surprised to see Titus O'Neil doing jobs on television anyway, because that's all that he really does. One of the things, I guess the deal with Mark Henry is that Mark Henry is going home. They showed a promo with him. So I think he's going to go away, and then we're going to miss him, and then he's going to come back as a babyface. That's how I read the situation. So that's his turn.
Sounds good to me. It's been set up fine on television.
What?
Babyface turn been set up fine on television.
Yeah.
All righty. We had Paul Heyman announcing that he had a new client. And he comes out, And he announces that his new client is the former Michael McGillicuddy, now named Kurt Axel, a combination of Kurt Hennig and Larry the Axe Hennig. Kurt Axel.
Rocky Maivia.
Yeah, Curtis Axel. So he comes out, remixed version of Kurt Hennig's music.
You know what's funny is I wouldn't be surprised if Heyman had something to do with this name. And the reason I say this is because it's a little known story that when Kurt Hennig and Paul Heyman were pretty tight. And when Kurt Hennig went to WWF in whatever it was, 88, 89, I think it was 89. No, maybe whatever. I think it might have been 88, actually. When he went there, that he wasn't originally going to be Mr. Perfect. I mean, Mr. Perfect was something that they came up with. I can't remember the exact time frame, but I do remember. What I do remember is that he went there. He was on TV as Kurt Hennig, and they told him, "We don't want to use you as Kurt Hennig. Come up with a name." So, like so many guys in that era would do. I got no idea. What do I do? Let me call Paul. Paul's a very charming, creative guy. So Paul's name was Curtis Mayhem. So when I heard Curtis Axel, I was thinking, like, I remember 25 years ago, Curtis Mayhem, and obviously the Curtis, from Kurt and Axel. Obviously, like I said, it's because Larry the Axe. Why wasn't he not just Curtis Axe?
Kurt Axe?
Curtis, because when it was Curtis Axel, I was thinking he was like the grandson of Santo or something.
I guess. Or the brother of Axel Rotten.
I guess, yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, Paul came out and he tried so hard to get this over. And at this point, obviously, nobody cares because it's still Michael McGillicuddy. Maybe the dude will get over, but right now he's not over. So to help his cause, out comes Triple H, who proceeded to treat him like a complete jobber, shushing him and belittling him.
He totally blew, let the adults talk.
Let the adults talk.
He slapped him. The guy went down. He didn't come back on him. He didn't beat him down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was not a good debut for Kurt Axel.
And a guy in that position needs all the help he can get.
Well, he didn't get it tonight, but there's time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Kurt Axel gets slapped ass.
Here's the thing. Okay. Triple H has been high on him for a long time, and it's always surprised me. I mean, I've heard this for months and months and months that Triple H just thinks the world of him. I don't know if it's because he's 6'3 or 6'2 and a half or whatever he is. He's kind of tall, and a lot of those guys aren't. I've never seen. I saw the great match he had with Tyson Kidd in NXT, however many months back that was. And I've seen, he's good, but I've never seen something where, there are guys in, whether it's in developmental or guys that are even on the card that they don't do anything with. Like a Tyson Kidd, although he's hurt right now. Where there's moments where you look at him and go, God, they could really do something with this guy. I mean, this guy's special. And with Michael McGillicuddy, it was, I never got that vibe. I did always think he was good, but it was never like superstar. It was just, he's all right. But Triple H has always seen something in the guy, just whatever it is. And I never could figure out why with Triple H... so high on the guy that he continued to do all those jobs and was treated like that. And then now when they decide to pull the plug on him or pull the trigger on him, not the plug, that
essentially pulled the plug tonight.
But when they do that, Triple H, I mean, it's like in his mind, it's like, well, he's getting a rub because he's in the ring with me and Paul Heyman. And it's like, don't treat him like he's like a joke. I was just really surprised because, again, the guy needs help going from, job guy to a guy we're supposed to take serious. It's a very difficult step to take. And, Paul was doing the best he could with it. But then when the segment was over, it was like you didn't feel like the guy was going to be anything special. You thought that it was like some job guy that they're dressing up and giving Paul Heyman. And I was thinking when the segment was over that what they were going to do, of course, they didn't do anything close to this, but watching this, I was thinking, like, you know, Curtis Axel's like a swerve. The real guy is going to come out and attack Triple H at the end of the show, and this guy's just going to be thrown to the...
Incorrect. Incorrect.
What?
You're incorrect about that.
I was, but that's what I was thinking, because I wasn't thinking it when they first brought him out, but I was thinking it when Triple H slaps him in the face and he's down there and doesn't make a comeback, and Triple H is just treating him
well,
like that.
Well, if you've watched a lot of Triple H, you probably shouldn't have been that surprised. This is your usual behavior.
When he buries guys, though, they're usually guys that are prelim guys. He usually doesn't bury main event guys.
I mean, McGillicuddy is a prelim guy.
But they're trying to, if they're putting him with Paul.
I know that's their idea, but right now he is a prelim guy.
But
he is lower than Chris Jericho when Hunter buried him. He's lower than Jeff Hardy when Hunter buried him. He's lower than
Booker T. I know.
Booker, but, I mean.
Oh, yeah, but he was also in the television main event tonight against Triple H.
Yeah.
In Triple H's first match on Raw in 3 years.
I understand all of this. I'm just saying that
I know you do.
I wasn't surprised.
I wasn't shocked either, but I don't understand it if I actually sat there and think about it, though.
I've never understood it. It's just what he does. I don't think he can help himself.
I think he thinks he's a comedian or something.
Well, I'm sure he does. He can be really funny. But this is not a time for comedy.
I know he's got a real funny touch about him, but it's like he's the guy running the company. You know what I mean? Or going to be running the company. Of course, by the time he's running the company, he's going to be out of the ring. But I mean, there's the feeling. I know there's the feeling that I lost on TV. I need to protect my stature. I need to get something back. And you could do that. But you can still help the other guy more than he did. But he didn't, you know. I mean, I guess the feeling is, since I'm not winning the match, and in a sense, I guess he lost the match, that he probably felt he needed to do this now since he's losing at the end. So maybe that was that was his rationale. Nevertheless, it's nice they're giving somebody something. They're trying to push somebody new. All those things we say they should do. And in the end, he did win the match, but
he did.
I don't know who you know. I mean, I guess he didn't really win.
So they just threw it out like they did that last
man
standing.
They never really announced that he won. It's just the other guy couldn't continue. So in theory, he won.
Anyway, they announced the main event of those two guys, and also Hunter, in a complete bully-like fashion, came out and admitted that he had lost fair and square to the Giant the night before, but now he wanted his revenge by beating up poor Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
What a bully.
Yeah, which he didn't, yeah.
He never got his chance. We'll get to that match here in a bit. So we had Big E Langston and Alberto Del Rio. This was power versus technique. Del Rio kept going for example, the arm bar, which actually is his only submission. And Big E Langston kept powering his way out. And near the finish, AJ grabbed the pail from Ricardo. Ricardo, this dude needs to hold on to his stuff. He lost his towel on Sunday. He lost his pail tonight. I don't know what to do with this guy, but she threw the pail into the ring. Referee was distracted. Big E poked Alberto in the eyes, hit him with his finish. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, that was interesting.
It was very good.
Yeah. I mean, especially since, in theory, whenever Ziggler comes in, Ziggler's going to be defending against Del Rio. But I could see, you know, I mean, I think the idea down the line is still Langston as a babyface. So it's good he got this win.
Didn't play it up big enough that this was by far the biggest win of Big E Langston's career.
Well, it was.
No, they should have made it a big deal.
I think it'll play into a future storyline. Watch it be forgotten. But I think it makes, when I look at it, I think, okay, they're building something up here. Maybe Del Rio just beats him the next time or something. But I think they're building something up where, you know, like, I beat this guy that you couldn't beat, or, you know, kind of, you know, because if he turns or doesn't turn and it's Ziggler who turns, you know, you want the guy to have that certain, you know, credibility of being at the same level as Ziggler. And this is a good one to have.
I don't know about you, but after this, I got a commercial for SmackDown where they plugged the last show before the most extreme night of the year.
Yes, they did. They did that nationally.
Oops.
Yep.
That was last week's show.
Yep. Didn't they talked about three? I wasn't really paying close attention because I knew that as soon as I saw that commercial, I knew that they botched it. But they talked about the three-way, didn't they?
Yeah, they were just pushing Ziggler and, I mean, they pushed the three guys. I don't know if they necessarily pushed the three-way.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ziggler was all over it. We had AJ beating Layla, and this is now the second week in a row that AJ has done the octopus, and the second week in a row that her opponent taps out by spanking her in the ass repeatedly. So I think that's the gimmick.
No, okay.
There you go.
There was a neck breaker in this match that I thought somebody may have gotten hurt on.
I don't know.
It was like a very awkward looking spot right before the finish.
Not most of the spots. AJ seemed fine.
Well, it was Layla that went down like she went down. She was the one who looked like she could have gotten hurt the way that she went down.
Hmm. I didn't notice that. We had a great match. Actually, no, I'm skipping ahead. Sorry. We had a not great match. Cody Rhodes beat Zack Ryder quickly. Zack got a little bit of a comeback, got kicked in the face. Beautiful disaster kick. They noted that you could watch the app to see Ryback watching. He proceeded to come out and destroy Zack. Gave him a great power bomb. Zack took a great power bomb. And then the shell shock. And then he dragged him over and threw him in the ambulance. And only other thing of note is that Cody Rhodes' fake tan looked really fake tonight.
Yeah.
Out of control. Then we had a great match. The Shield against Kofi Kingston, Daniel Bryan, and Kane. Everybody looked good, but in particular, Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins were heroes in this match.
That was just a great match.
They were so awesome. Daniel Bryan is he's the weak link, they say. So all the heels mocked him for being the weak link, and he is now working like a guy who's pissed off and doesn't want to be the weak link. So he's being very aggressive, and him and Seth together were just, they were so awesome. And they went, I don't even know how long they went.
23 minutes. Which is really long for a one-fall television. I mean, I can't even remember the last time there was a one-fall television match that went this long. I mean,
yeah.
They went when they did that elimination match. But in an elimination match, you almost have to go long because you got all those falls. But, yeah, this was, they went through, you know, several segments. But, yeah, it was really, really good.
Excellent match.
All action, loads of fun. I really like the Shield. I mean,
the Shield's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, but they're always good. And, of course, Daniel Bryan being able to work with those guys, you know, and they, you know, I mean, Kane's been way more motivated. You know, I mean, Kane was good here. Kofi was real good. You know, this kind of made up for the fact that they got shortchanged on time last night, and they really tore the house down here.
Yeah, they had a great match. Roman Reigns pinned Kane with the Shield again, clean.
Yeah,
what did I say?
Pretty,
the Shield
clean
spear. Yeah.
Well, Rollins did a springboard knee to Kane, and then
it's clean in a tag match.
No, I mean it's. I mean it's. You know, as heel wins go, it's clean. Yeah,
Shield's been winning every match clean. It's awesome.
Yeah. Just want to think that they did a deal where Ambrose suplexed Daniel Bryan on the floor, and I think Rollins threw Kofi Kingston into the post. So it was like Kane and Reigns were in the ring. They were like the two in the ring, and then Rollins did the springboard. I think Kane was set up the choke slam, and then Rollins did the springboard knee to stop that, and then Reigns did the spear. So that was what they did for the finish. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I wonder, like, you know, they talked about Kane and Bryan getting a rematch. So that may be on the next pay-per-view. They didn't really give a time or place for it. So I think that these guys are going to be working with each other and probably in trios matches in some form, I would think for the next several weeks, because you don't need it. You know, you want to avoid the tag, or maybe they'll be doing singles with each other. They could be doing that as well. We could get a Daniel Bryan Seth Rollins single, or a Daniel Bryan or a Kane Roman Reigns, or a mix of those things.
Any combination of those, I'd be happy with.
Yeah,
particularly involving Daniel Bryan. So that was awesome. This led to a segment where Triple H is backstage getting ready, and trainer Larry comes in, says the doctor doesn't think Triple H should wrestle tonight. Triple H says that if the doctor decides that Triple H is not going to wrestle, then the doctor should prepare to seek employment elsewhere. This doesn't seem right.
It didn't seem right at all, especially, you know, we didn't mention this last night, actually, because I didn't even know it until after we did the show. But one of the things about last night's show is you know, there was a at the show, one of the big themes was, because of what happened to Ziggler, it's like, you know, okay, this is the Extreme Rules, stay away from everybody's head. I mean, it was really strongly talked about. I mean, the concussion thing. They're very serious about the concussion thing, as they should be. And because, like, one person noted to me that, you know, like, as far as, like, you know, the show compared to last year's show, because last year's Extreme Rules was one of the best pay-per-views they ever did, and this year's Extreme Rules was, I mean, I still thought it was a good show because of the last two matches, but not certainly not a great show. And I just remarked, you know, I thought it was a good show. And it's like, well, you know, if you consider the limitations, it was a really good show because everybody, because of Ziggler, was told, you know, stay away from stuff to the head. I mean, it was really made clear. So, you know, because if you remember in the Brock Lesnar-John Cena match, I mean, Brock Lesnar killed John Cena's brain in that match. I mean, it made it a compelling match, but I mean, he elbowed the hell out of his head.
They beat the hell out of each other, yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, none of that last night. Although the storyline there was, as we'll get to. We had Caitlin and Natalya backstage. Cody walked by with a phone. They grabbed it to see if he was the one who had been texting Caitlin, but he wasn't.
He was texting pictures of himself.
He's putting pictures of himself on the internet.
Yeah, and they were grossed out, and Caitlin was glad. So I guess that they wanted to completely establish that it's not Cody. I guess, right?
I think that's the idea.
I mean, that's
it's a swerve.
I don't think it's a swerve, though. It could be. What about Big E? I mean, Big E, you know what I mean?
I think Big E was, when this first came down, it was...
I mean, Big E was going to be the guy at one point.
Yeah.
I have no idea who's going to, how this is going to turn out.
Yeah. So, then we had the announcement that, in fact, Randy Orton won. I'm shocked.
I know.
So, Randy Orton faced Jack Swagger, and he won, of course, RKO. They had a good match. Fans were into it.
I thought it was too long for this point in the show. It was, you know, a three-hour show. We just had a long match. I mean, it was a good match. I'm just not sure. I mean, we'll see when the quarters come out. I just have this feeling that this match, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I have a feeling this match really, really did not do well as far as numbers. I just felt watching it that it was dragging for me. It was just feeling too long. Again,
how long did it go?
What?
How long did it go?
16 minutes.
How long?
Actually, 16 minutes. 16. A little over 16 minutes.
16 minutes.
Yeah.
I did like there was one spot where Randy Orton very loudly right in front of the camera called a chop block.
I know. I mean, I was far away from the screen when that happened, and even I could hear that.
Amazing how that works.
Wasn't he doing that last night too?
I may have.
I mean, no. You know who I saw? Who I heard calling stuff was Triple H with Brock. I heard him telling Brock like stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it was.
All righty, Dean Ambrose and Kofi Kingston for the U.S. title on SmackDown, and then we had the Triple H Kurt Axel feud. I guess if you call it a feud, feud may be over. Triple H got woozy, could not continue. By the end, he was overselling it, but apparently, I guess there were some people that thought he might really be hurt. He wasn't. It's all storyline. They're going to get the family together to try to convince Triple H he should stop wrestling for his own safety.
Right. This is like the I get the way the storyline is now, you know, and God knows what's going to happen when they bring him back. But I think he's going to be gone for a while. And then when they bring him back, it's like Vince and Stephanie are there like, you're done. And I guess it's, I don't know if it's a part of the thing to establish the concussion situation or just a storyline and, you know, maybe he'll come back from it or something. But that's the idea, is that the family wants him to stop wrestling because of his injuries, especially their fear of his brain injuries. And, so that's the idea behind it. And it was just a way, you know, this, I don't know as a fact this was it, but I do know, like, last night I was told that Vince had this idea for Raw today. And the deal is that, and he wouldn't tell anyone what it was. He had a real special thing. And when this show's over, it's like, I guess this is it. But I guess that they felt that, like, this was a really good cliffhanger. And it was better cliffhanger than most. I mean, a lot of people compared it to the Shawn Michaels thing. I know the night of the Shawn Michaels thing, this was in 95 with Owen Hart, when Shawn Michaels, just collapsed, and they went off the air, and they teased that he might be dead or something. Really, they did. There was so much commotion that night. I mean, it was incredible. And I guess...
I remember this vividly.
Yeah.
Panic!
Yeah, there was a lot of commotion, people thinking that it was real and all that. And I felt no commotion at all tonight. So now, I think we're just different eras where no one's going to believe hardly anything, whatever. I mean, they tried, but, you know, the idea was to do sort of the same thing, and I don't think people bought it in that way, but, I mean, as far as, it was hard for me to feel. I felt that it was good in the sense that, people are probably going to be more curious at this finish than most endings of the show. So that's good. So, I mean, I liked it. I didn't think he was overselling it because of where they're going. I like something, I don't know. It was different, so I liked it, yeah.
So I guess we'll see where they go with that. As noted, John Cena back next week. Ambulance match at the pay-per-view. And then obviously all the stuff for main event and SmackDown, so...
Yeah, they didn't. Let's see. As far as like, I guess you know we're probably going with the idea of Del Rio and Ziggler. If Ziggler's going to be ready by then, which again we won't know until he is. But I think that's probably where they're going. And then what's the Kane Daniel Bryan against the Shield in the rematch? Don't know where. There's no one in specific that's been set up for Ambrose. Caitlin and AJ at some point. At one point, Caitlin and AJ was going to be on tonight's show. So maybe it'll be on Raw next week, or maybe they're going to hold it off for the... I would think at this point, it's probably best to hold that one off for the pay-per-view. I guess that, you know, so as far as Orton, Orton and Sheamus and who they're going to be with, don't know. I mean, no big show on the show at all. Barely any mention of him. Mark Henry, obviously not going to, probably not going to be around for a while until he comes, and they, the Shield, when they did their interview, the one thing of the Shield interview, which was before their match, they're now taking credit for everything that happens. They were the reason that Rock lost the title to John Cena. They were the reason that Rock had his surgery somehow. They were the reason for The Undertaker not being around, which I guess in storyline they did powerbomb him, and that was his last thing. And they were the reason that Ryback turned, which they sort of were, and therefore they were the reason that John Cena was, injured last night. So everything that happens in WWE, they were with the top guys. They were the reason. That was the kind of the theme of their promo before their long match.
All right, we got plenty of time to get into the questions here today. Should note very...
I want to mention one thing real quick. Really, really great story by Keith Greenberg on Randy Savage and the Popple family.
Yes.
In fact, so much that I ended up writing a story myself on with some of the notes from that story and some things that I remembered that weren't in that story. So that'll be in the Observer this week. And I'm also writing... I'm in the middle of writing... stuff on 2000. So a lot of good history going to come out in the Observer this week. Not
2000. What's 2000?
2000, the beginning of the end of the business when ECW and WCW went down.
Is there a reason you're writing this?
Well, you know, the WWE thing kind of had this story on what, you know, if ECW would have survived, what would have happened. And so I was kind of going through like the lay of the land of what caused everything to happen the way it did and how things could have, you know, things could have happened easily. You know, between that and the 80s, when you look back at different things, you know, I think that the period in 85 through 87 completely changed the industry. And there are things that could have happened where it could have gone in several different things could have happened where it could have gone in different directions, which I actually wrote about. And then in 2000... again, you know, things could have been very different. I mean, WCW perhaps could have survived. ECW perhaps, you know, I mean, ECW, while it was really on its deathbed, was the closest it ever came to actually being able to make it, because if they had gotten one of those TV deals, either one that they were going for, you know, which would have been either a TBS deal, which, you know, they really weren't going to ever get it, but that was Paul, you know, that was Paul, what Paul was keeping the company alive for. Was his feeling was WCW is going out of business. They're done. TBS is going to always want wrestling because they've always had wrestling, and therefore we're gonna you know, who else can they go with? That was the thing. Who else can they go with? And I said, someone's going to do something with WCW. No, they're dead. So, you know, he was gearing for that, and he also said, when is backup plan? USA, they're going to lose Raw. They may want us. So it's like at that point. If they could have gotten on either of those stations, and those were stations that paid money, you know, real money for product, I mean, I don't know if he could have survived like 12 more years, you know, but he would have been able, in theory, you know, when we discussed the whole thing with the finances and everything, the way he ran his business, he could have been profitable, at least at first, and probably for as long as he could deliver decent ratings. For a while. Now, could he deliver decent ratings with the ECW product on TBS or on USA? I don't know about that. That's you know, he obviously didn't on TNN. He didn't really. I mean, he didn't, you know, he's doing 0.9 to 1.1. If he was doing a little bit better, maybe he would have actually gotten that USA deal. Probably not, though, because Barry Dillard, you know, wasn't, you know, Barry Dillard getting burned by WWF wasn't really that, you know, interested in going back into it. But, you know, Eric, you know, they announced the purchase, they announced the TV deal. You know, everything was hunky-dory until Jamie Kellner came in and just said, well, we're canceling wrestling. And then, you know, Eric had whatever it was, like he had like 2 weeks to cut a deal, save that thing. And, I mean, he worked his ass off. You know, he was trying to get with Fox to get on FX. And if he would have gotten on FX, if he could have cut the deal, WCW would have survived, you know, and then again, would they have lasted 12 more years? Could they have turned a profit? Would Eric have learned, you know, from his mistakes? I mean, this run in TNA maybe tells you that, in fact, they wouldn't have made it. I don't know. But, you know, again, that's not how it worked out. But anyway, that's kind of the theme of what I've been writing today.
Yeah, link to the Randy Savage stories in the Daily Update today, and... one thing about it is it's noted that he was a physical wreck, and the big, maybe the biggest reason for it, despite everything he did in wrestling, his worst injury in his later years was from Spider-Man.
You know, I didn't know it was from Spider-Man, but I knew he had a bad neck, because do you remember when he came back to TNA, that very brief time, he was going to do a big main event with Jeff Jarrett, and then he actually... wouldn't even do the main event, and he walked out on his main event, if you remember. And that was like that's pretty much how his career ended. And he never wrestled again. And he was supposed to do that. He did that six-man tag where he showed up and only did the pin. He didn't even do the match. And it was because he was so messed up that he couldn't do anything. But you know what? I mean, at the end of his career, you know, even in WCW, the last couple of years of WCW, he was pretty messed up by then too. I mean, he hit all the stuff had caught up with him a lot.
I just want to mention that if you go to the article, there is a clip of the fight scene from Spider-Man, and he takes a monkey flip. And I know that sometimes you hear that a dude, oh, he took this movie, land on his head. And, you know, sometimes it's kind of just like a figure of speech. He just kind of was upside down, ass over tea kettle or whatever. But this dude takes a monkey flip, lands upside down on the ropes, and then goes straight down onto his head. And he had to shoot this scene, apparently, like, take after take after take. And he went, and he did it himself, and he hit the ropes, and he landed on his head over and over again. And you just watch it one time on this video, this clip from the movie, and it's like, oh, my God. This dude, like, landed right on his head.
Yeah.
And I don't even know, like, I don't know. I don't know what he was thinking, what they were thinking. I mean, there had to have been a less dramatic way to do the spot that they did, or a safer way.
Now you know why stuntmen have incredible painkiller problems.
You're telling me.
Yeah. I've talked to some people who, you know, like fighters and wrestlers that have gone and done stunt work, and it's like, you know, it's brutal.
Yeah. I could not believe my eyes when I watched that clip over and over again of him landing on his head. But yeah, it's a fabulous article. I mean, it's sad, obviously. It's 2-year anniversary of his death, but very excellent article.
Really good article. Absolutely. So
check that out. All right, questions here. This person says, whatever happened to that poster on the Underground a few years ago who was making all the crazy accurate UFC predictions, got semi-famous with an MMA blogosphere for 5 minutes. Did he go away? Was his true identity outed? Was he a Zuffa employer, industry insider, or was he just some lucky fan?
That was a really weird deal. That's all I could tell you. But he just disappeared. A lot of his stuff wasn't right. Some of his stuff was right. The freakiest one to me, we've talked about this when this happened, was the Brock Lesnar thing. I think it was before the Junior Dos Santos fight, when he was pulling out. I think that was the fight, but it was definitely, I'm almost sure it was, because I remember I had gotten something from someone very close to Brock, and it wasn't Paul. Because now everyone's like, oh, it was Paul. In fact, Paul was, in fact, during this period, completely denying that anything was happening, even though I already knew it was. And it was just, you know, Brock's out of the junior match. But, you know, he would prefer, you know, whatever, you know. It was pretty clear I'm not supposed to mention it, but I knew and it was going to break any day. So I was like, okay, you know, it's going to break. I have to wait. It was only like a couple of hours later, this guy is on there and he goes, Brock is injured, which, and he wasn't injured. It was a diverticulitis. And I knew it was a diverticulitis. So he just goes, I knew he didn't really know, but it was so freaky because I heard this. Okay. I heard this. My son had a baseball game. So I heard this. I actually think I told you, didn't I, Brian? Because I think you're the only person I talked to.
I remember discussing this.
I either called you, or I emailed you, or I think I emailed you, or maybe I called you from the baseball game. I don't really remember which it was, but I did tell you. But you were the only one I even alerted this to. So I go to the baseball game,
and it wasn't me, by the way, everybody.
What?
It wasn't me, by the way.
Oh, I knew it wasn't you. I'm not like accusing you. But
I'm telling everybody else who's not going to accuse me.
I know.
I have better things to do, everyone.
Yeah. But anyway, so I come back from the game. It's a couple hours later, and this guy is on the internet, and he just goes, you know, Brock is injured, and he's going to be out of this match with Junior. And I knew he wasn't injured, but I knew he had the diverticulitis had come back. But the thing was, is the guy goes, Dave Meltzer knows. And he said that. He goes, Dave Meltzer knows. And it's like, what the fuck? I mean, I had just known a couple of hours earlier. So it's like, how would he know? How would he have the story sort of right, but wrong? And that was the only I was the only person mentioned in the thing of Dave Meltzer knows. So I was like really freaked out. It's like, who's this guy? how would he know I know? Because it's not like I, like if I had told five people, I would have suspected one of them. But when it was only you, I mean, I knew it wasn't you because you knew, you know, you knew what it was and you wouldn't have gotten that one wrong. But anyway, the whole point was, is he obviously had, so the guy that we're talking about obviously had some connections, but he disappeared. But he when he was doing that stuff, he did get a lot wrong and he did get a lot right. And he was ahead of the thing on several things. He obviously knew some people. So there you go.
So when did he disappear? What was his last
big
scoop?
Pretty quickly. I mean, it was only, he was around and he was sort of like this legend on the underground for a little while with all the scoops. And then he just disappeared.
What was his name?
I don't remember what his name was, but he started getting a lot of them wrong and then he disappeared.
Hmm. Was it possible it was the guy that told you the story in the first place?
Absolutely impossible.
Hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah, no, no. No, absolutely impossible.
All righty. Sounds like this person wouldn't have a computer then.
Perhaps.
All righty, let's move on here. Is WWE, this is about Curtis Axel. Is WWE still against having two people on the roster with the same first name? If so, does this mean Kurt Hawkins will be repackaged or released following tonight's debut of Curtis Axel?
I guess we'll find out.
I didn't even know he was still employed.
He's almost never on television. He's done. He does dark matches, you know, every now and then. But yeah, he's bare. I think that because again that they never use him, I don't know that it's like. It's probably not something that anyone's even thought of.
Person wants to know, what does Twitter think of WWE associating itself so closely with their brand? Twitter comes off like their biggest sponsor.
I don't know. I'm sure they're thrilled. I'm sure they love the publicity that someone's, you know, if I'm Twitter, I love WWE.
All right. This person says, what's happening with Jim Cornette? Does he have a future in the industry or is he likely finished?
I don't know. I don't know where he would go. I don't know where he would go.
Somebody told me that Jim Cornette had lost like 40 pounds, had started tanning, and was looking great.
Well, he got rid of the stress. You know, because usually when he is like away from wrestling, what he does when he's away from wrestling is he usually starts like eating better and exercising. And then he drops weight really quick, yeah.
Sounds like he needs to stay away.
I don't know where he would go. I mean, like, there's a part of me that goes, well, at some point, you know, everyone always comes back. But I don't know where he would go. And I don't know, like, TNA's not going to hire him. He's not going to WWF. Or WWE. That's not going to happen. I don't see him going to Ring of Honor, and there's nothing else. So, I mean, I never say never. Maybe in 5 years, you know, he'll resurface somewhere or 3 years, you know, but I had no idea.
All right. This person is wondering if it's possible that Caitlyn's secret admirer could be another girl and they do a lesbian storyline.
It's possible. I don't think it is. But anything's possible, sure.
And this person also wants to know if Vince Russo was involved in WWE.
No.
He's got a theory here.
No, theory's wrong.
He says that in his book, he mentioned one of his early jobs was the editor of a school newspaper, which was named The Shield.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that have been named The Shield.
All right.
In this world.
All right, let's see. This person says, I'm not asking the tired out question if Randy Savage and Stephanie McMahon, the rumor actually happened. What I'm asking, he says, is why do so many people, when the question is put to them, answer it so vaguely?
Because nobody was there and nobody knows for sure. The only two people know, one of them's not talking and the other one's not alive. And lots of people assume it because everyone's heard the story.
Bob Holly assumes it's true.
What?
Bob Holly believes the story.
Tons of people have talked to me in that company when all this was going down that 100% believed it. I mean, these are top people, you know. I mean, I've talked to so many people who believe it 100%, and it puts it this way, and it makes sense. I mean, why you know, why is he not in the Hall of Fame? Why was he never brought back, even for an appearance, for anything? I mean, there could be another reason, and there's you'll have people out there who will explain other reasons, but those reasons don't hold any water. And I'm not saying I know, because I don't know. But, you know, whatever. I mean, it's again, nobody knows for sure one way or the other than one guy who's not alive and one woman who's not talking about it. And but it's very, very strange, you know, again, that Randy Savage isn't, you know, not just not in the Hall of Fame, but everything that happened, you know, I mean, like no comeback, no nothing and of a guy such a big star. You know, no coming back on any of these special shows when they bring people back. I mean, I guess for a while, you know, for a year or two there, at the end, Randy wouldn't have come back because he was, you know, doing the antisocial thing. But up until that point, you know, he could have come back for any number of big shows that they had. He didn't have to wrestle. But, you know, again, there's your answer.
If Hulk Hogan didn't have a Madison Square Garden program with Bob Backlund because the McMahons didn't want Hogan to lose, why did Tony Atlas pin him in a short match at Madison Square Garden?
Because he was on the way out of the territory at the time. And that was his, you know, job on the way out. And so that you know, is a completely different thing as far as the reason that he didn't lose in the Garden was because they didn't want to beat him before Andre, because Andre and him... they thought that the big money was not Backlund and Hogan for New York, although they did do Backlund and Hogan in Philadelphia, because I saw a couple of their matches, and I know they did them in some other cities as well. But they thought that the big money in New York was Andre and Hogan, so they didn't want Backlund pinning Hogan before the Andre match. Now, once the Andre feud was over, and he was leaving the territory and going to the AWA, yeah, he could then lose to Tony Atlas. That was fine at that point.
All right, this person here says, what's Dave's opinion on the New York Times article claiming wrestlers would not testify in the Brody murder trial because of a code of silence? I was under the impression people who would testify were not informed of the trial until it had passed.
And well, that's Dutch. You know, Dutch got his subpoena, I think, like after, you know, we already knew the verdict, and then Dutch got a subpoena like a week later. But a lot of guys were afraid to say anything.
And he also says, do you think that Gonzalez acted alone, or was he murder part of a larger conspiracy?
I believe he acted alone. I don't think that I don't believe that they conspired to kill him. Some people do believe that. I don't believe that. I'm not even sure he wanted to kill him. I just think that he wanted to scare the shit out of him, though. I don't think, but who knows? I mean, who knows what goes through the mind of a guy who stabs somebody? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I you know, and the whole thing, it's amazing. You know, this is 25 years ago, right? And there, you know, this guy's, you know, he's 65 years old, and he's freaking in the top program in that country right now as we speak. And I mean, he was Booker again, and he went to the it just tells you, it's an incredible story. I mean, he went to the IWA, and I mean, the IWA was run by Victor Quinones, who was very, very close with Brody. I mean, one of they were very close. Savio was very close with Brody. You know, Savio hated Gonzalez, really hated him, and may still do, but you know, they brought him into IWA. You know, I guess because they just felt that. You know, I remember when Victor brought him in because Victor, you know, Victor told me, you know, he just goes, look, I got, you know, 42 families that we have to feed and he'll draw money. And, you know, Savio was really against it but we've got to draw money. You know, we're struggling and he'll help us. It'll be a shot in the, you know, shot to our business. And, you know, it's been a long, long time ago and, you know, I mean, that was a very difficult decision for him to make because, you know, he knew what went down, and again, you know, he was, you know, Victor Quinones was Brody's friend. So.
All right, one more here. This person wants to know, have any plans? Have you heard any rumors or plans? Possibility of unifying the two world titles?
I mean, it was talked about whatever it was like 2 years ago for a little while. But I haven't heard a word one. I get another question because we could do another one more question.
Alrighty. This person here says, Dave mentions he's been to Japan and has seen many wrestling events there. Can Dave speak Japanese fluently, or did he have a translator with him? How did that work?
Nah, I don't. I know almost no words of Japanese. When I was there, I probably knew about, you know, a few words. But no, I knew, you know, a lot of people in Japan know English. And, I mean, I didn't have a translator. I mean, I did at certain points, you know, when I would socialize with people who were Japanese that knew English. So in that sense, I had a translator. But I mean, I went on my own to a lot of places in Japan, you know, on every trip. I mean, I learned the place, and I wasn't, you know, I learned the subways and I learned the trains and all that, and they're all in English, stations. So, and the directions, you know, on the maps and everything like that they're not that difficult. The food, you know, I mean, you know, the deal with me with the food there was that I would just point to something on the menu. I avoided American food. I mean, part of my thing of going to Japan was I would go there, I would go to a restaurant, and I would point to something on the menu having absolutely no clue what it was. You know, and
did they have a picture?
What?
Did they have at least a picture?
A lot of places did have a picture, but a lot of places didn't. But to me, it was like I'm going to learn to eat Japanese food having no clue whatsoever what it is until I eat it. And I'm glad I did. You know, it opened me up to a lot of different food that I never would have tried if it was here. So, I loved going to Japan. It was an adventure, but no, I did not know, you know, I mean, I could count to 10 or something and I could, you know, but as far as words go and have a conversation in Japanese, not a chance.
Well, there's still time, you know.
I tried to learn it once, but I just didn't have the time to. That's a difficult language. I mean, it's really. I remember I was, you know, Dory Funk Jr. learned it late in life. Like, Dory Funk Jr. was there. Dory Funk Jr. probably started there in the late 60s, probably like, or maybe 1970-ish, somewhere in that range, right? And he was going all the time through the 80s. And he didn't know a word of Japanese, and Terry Funk didn't know a word of Japanese, and they were the bookers for all Japan, and they didn't know any Japanese. And then, like, way later in life, I mean, Dory decided that, you know, he was going to learn Japanese. And this thing with Dory is, like, this is where I really learned that Dory Funk Jr. is a really smart guy, okay? I mean, not that I ever thought he wasn't, you know, I mean, I've known the guy for 30 years, and, like, way back then, I mean, when I would talk to Dory Jr., I mean, when it came to things like booking philosophies and things like that, Dory Jr. was one of the best. I mean, I learned a lot of very interesting things, you know, as far as, you know, booking, different booking ideas and stuff from him that was very solid lessons to learn. Very, very good, you know, that a lot, you know. So I always thought of him as you know, back in that day, at that period, as being a pretty sharp guy. But, you know, he went and he learned that language. And I mean, he could speak it perfectly after, you know, a couple of years. I mean, I was impressed because that's a difficult language.
All right, everybody. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. And we got a show. We had a lot of shows up this weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and tonight. And back issue of The Observer is going to go up tomorrow. I'll have a new Figure Four Weekly up the next couple of days, probably tomorrow, actually. New Observer. Two Observers were up last week as well. So tons of stuff to check out. So head up there, and we'll talk to you again after a while.